Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. I'm Leah Gross, founder of Circle Care Services. I'll bring you autism experts from all kinds of fields for helpful parenting ideas, insights, and strategies. Tune in for learning and support and connection. Hi, Tara. Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. Thanks so much for joining. Can you introduce yourself and give us a little bit of background on your relationship with the autism community and the different hats you wear?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Leah. It's great to be here. So nice to talk to you. I'd love to share a little bit about me. First and foremost, I am a mom and a grandmom. So my daughter, she's an adult, and she is self-diagnosed autistic, had a lot of diagnoses growing up, more mental health, you know, back, you know, 30 years ago, or well, 25 years ago or so when it started. Her son, my grandson, is living with me, and he's 14 and autistic. So that's kind of my direct connection to the community.
Okay.
Another direct connection to not the autism community necessarily, but neurodivergent community. I have ADHD. I was diagnosed in my 40s.
Oh, wow. And then as well, what's your work?
Okay. The professional side? Sure. So professionally, I went to school to be a gen ed teacher, but became a long-term sub in a small private school local to me, and very small school that serviced kids with mostly ADHD and mild learning disabilities. Well, 2001 or 2002, most of these middle schoolers came back after being reevaluated with an Asperger's diagnosis. So here I thought I was teaching a bunch of ADHDers, which was crazy anyway. But then, you know, very, I wouldn't say crazy, but very active. Okay. But then they were coming back with an Asperger's diagnosis, and I didn't know anything about this, being a general education teacher. So I had to learn really quickly, and I tried everything. I have some great stories about so many students I love and I remember from 20 some years ago.
They each make an impact,
Oh my gosh, amazing. I wouldn't be here today without those kids. Definitely. It was just that impactful. And I tried everything, Leah. I tried and I looked into every box program and curriculum out there, whatever. Nothing was working, right? So the kids would kind of tease each other or wouldn't communicate at all. And it was just so hard. Finally, I went to this presentation by Michelle Garcia Winner. I think it was 2010 or somewhere around that time. And I was I had a ha-ha moment. It was oh my gosh, this sounds like these guys that I'm teaching, right? Finally, exactly like these guys. So I took back a lot of her concepts and materials. I just bought everything. I didn't care. You know, teachers, they buy everything anyway.
So what is her primary focus, Michelle Garcia Winner?
Yes. Okay. So the primary focus really is about if I'm going to explain it myself. I mean, there's so much information. And for your viewers, if you haven't heard of Michelle Garcia Winner and her social thinking methodology, it's really a cool thing to look into. And she has a website full of information, free information and articles, but there's a lot there. So I'll tell you, just in a nutshell, it's all about really kids communicating well, understanding the world around them. It's all about perspective taking, because our autistic kids are living in the moment in their own heads, right? So what we want to do is try to help them understand that the world that they're seeing, they can figure that out. And even though it seems confusing, it's really very different from what they're thinking in their own head. Does that make sense?
So pretty much it's taking the child's perspective and almost seeing the world through the child's eyes versus seeing it through your own lens.
So, okay. Yeah. Kind of we are trying to, of course, understand their perspective. And for me as a professional, I try to help the child understand everybody else's perspective. So, because they understand themselves very well. They know what they're thinking and feeling and what they want to do and what they don't want to do. But the confusion sets in when they're not able to take the perspective of others and understand the expectations of others. You know, try to understand that crazy world around them. Like, why are people doing the things they're doing? And why are they saying what they're saying? And really, that's how we go through life, is we navigate, negotiate situations based on knowing what somebody else is possibly feeling or thinking about us, not just the situation. And that really helps. So that's what it's all about, that perspective taking, the perspective taking skills.
And really slowing it down for the child and breaking it down, because they might not be able to read the facial expression and what that means, and almost slowly teaching them what that facial expression means, or even that language expression means. And like when you say, throw it at me, you might mean a lot of different things, and that child might be just taking it as throw it at me, and you might be meaning many different things, like give me an idea, right? Like, so they're like, what are you asking me to throw? There's nothing in my hand, right? So really like breaking it down for the child and having them understand what's going on.
Yeah, Leah, it's a different way of thinking, right? I mean, we take it for granted, just like you said, the example you gave. And one of the most common examples I give to parents to understand this, and even to kids, is something as simple as, okay, a teacher handing us a test. Okay, we don't want that test, right? But we say thank you. Why do we say thank you? Not because we want the test to take. Typically, we don't want to. We're thanking the teacher for handing it to us nicely. That's it. So it's that kind of perspective taking. It's that kind of understanding of, you know, what the other person is thinking and feeling, and how to make them feel heard, or like you want them to be near them, or, you know.
Definitely. Okay. So I want to go back to your original journey with your daughter. And I'd love to hear what that journey was. And it seems like you said diagnosed later in life. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting. And this is what pretty much kind of did guide me to different areas that I kind of went into here in my adult life. But yeah, my daughter was having trouble with friends. Okay. She didn't have many friends. And she was always teased or bullied. I'm not sure if it was complete bullying, but she did feel bad about herself because of the way kids made her feel all the time. So I got calls from the nurse all the time. She was in the nurse's office with a stomach ache, or, you know, always going through all this. And it was causing a lot of stress and anxiety. She didn't want to go to school. Nobody in the school would really tell me exactly what was going on, you know, but intuitively I thought, you know, this is not a safe, emotionally safe place for her. So we took her to a psychologist and started therapy. And here, along the lines, a few years as she became 12 or 13, she was becoming more and more withdrawn and anxious and stressed. So they diagnosed her with severe anxiety disorder. And then she started like pulling out her hair and cutting. She started, you know, for all of the hurt she was going through. So then, of course, psychologists sent us to psychiatrists, and then we started putting her on medication, and nothing really helped. I mean, it kept her kind of calm and got her through her teenage years, but it didn't help, you know, in any way as far as her understanding herself and being able to deal with the world differently. Well, at that time, I was still just exploring autism and social thinking. So I didn't really know what to do. Now looking back, it's like, okay. But we went that route, the mental health route.
Mental health with medication, or mental health with like social worker, psychologist, and doing sessions weekly?
Both. We didn't go into the other side of it as far as more of the self-help and really trying to get to the root of the problem. you know, which may have helped us. Maybe
yeah,
get
if you could rewind time and you wanted to share with parents what you wish you would have done, what would that have been?
I wish I would have probably followed through with more testing. And nowadays, it's easy. You know, the schools, they test for ADHD and autism and everything else. Back then, it wasn't. Girls didn't have autism. It wasn't as prevalent, right? So it was a lot harder. And that's why we didn't go that route, I guess, basically.
Wow. Okay. So continue on your journey. So you went ahead and you went with the medical model and the like working one-on-one with a therapist. And where did that take you?
So that was about it. That's what we stuck with. And that's what she stuck with for so long. So it was really hard. I think she got caught up in the wrong crowds. You know, nothing was really, it wasn't really working as far as getting her to that next successful level in her life, right? So I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't just support her and support the doctors and what they were saying. Well, she got caught up in the wrong crowd. She got pregnant early, her senior year of high school. So, you know, and of course, as a mom, you know, I'm going to support her the best I can. And to me, she was such a, you know, young person, but she wasn't able to handle it. So she lived with me and him and, you know, lived with the dad for a while. And, you know, that didn't work out. So it was all kind of like,
that must have been a challenging time.
It was challenging. And now that I look back, it's like, I don't think I saw it as challenging necessarily as it was a necessity. It was just kind of like, okay, you know, this is the way it is. And this is what we need to do, you know, basically. Now, the only thing is it put a strain on my relationship with her. So, you know, of course, if you think about somebody with autism and developmentally, like how they are emotionally, they just don't grow up until they're in like their late 20s or early 30s, you know. And moms out there, I'm sorry to tell you, this is kind of the way it is. So neurodevelopmentally, you know, these kids are going to be 3, 6, sometimes 10 years behind until they get into their late 20s or early 30s. Then we might be able to, you know, get somewhere, right? So that's what I was dealing with, but didn't know it. And so she, you know, just kind of like got really mad at me and just blamed everything on me and left. We didn't have a relationship for a few years. And I had custody of her grandson because she just couldn't do it. And her son, my grandson. And of course, I went ahead and went through the testing for him, made sure that the difficulties he was having in school was similar to her. So I was like, oh, well, here we go.
Spot it this time young.
Oh, I got it this time, right? I know a little bit more now. And so, yeah, and he's autistic. So it's like not with mild supports, like not many supports, but my gosh, socially and emotionally, you know, developmentally, same things. So I'm getting a lot further with him because I can get the supports needed. I can help him from an autistic point of view.
And you have a really interesting point of view because you had one child that you didn't pick up on the precursors while she was young. And now you're having a second chance with your grandchild, and you picked up at a young age. And I always say in my therapy room that I do see that when children are diagnosed younger and we have those years where the brain is developing, we see that therapy goes that much further. Was that your experience?
Totally, totally. So, I mean, you know, there's so much that's involved, and, you know, not many of us get second chances, I guess. Like when you say second chance, it's like, wow, you know what? I really went through, you know, a lot. Leia, I've got it this time. I have, you know, when you talk about second chances, you know, I really feel like the first time I don't hold myself to fault, you know, over that. And even though, you know, you can look at it and say, I could look back and say, you know what, I really kind of failed as a mom because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And but none of us do. We're all moms for the first time every single day. And our kids, they are themselves for the first time every single day, you know. So, hey, you know, things happen. I learned a lot. This is my second chance to really help my grandson at this point. And it's working. And everything that I've learned and relearned is working. And it's amazing. So I put in a lot of my professional skill sets into raising him, of course. But, you know, I don't look back. I just look forward. It's like, okay, you know what? I screwed up before. And now it's like, this is great. I learned so much. And my daughter and I, you know, things have mended. You know, she's getting older now, like I said. So
that developmental phase is coming in. And yeah. How is your relationship now? And what would you recommend to parents that go through a rough patch in raising a child?
Okay, so this is something that was really, really hard for me. And it took me a long time because, first of all, I was angry with her for blaming me for everything and leaving and blaming everything bad in her life on me, right? Of course, kids are going to do that. But she was in her 20s. And, you know, if you think about it, that's what kids do at 13, 14, 15, like neurotypical, you know, like developmentally aging kids. But so she blamed me for everything. I felt horrible about that. I was mad at her. And then I went through this cycle of, oh my gosh, I was a horrible mom. You know, I was horrible and I just beat myself up over it. And it was just, I don't even want to think about how dark that was. It was very dark and very scary. It was a scary time. And I thought I had lost her, basically. And, so what I had to do was I just had to really say, look, I had to convince myself, no, you know what? What else was I supposed to do? This was it. And this happened. So what can I do now? And to be honest with you, the one thing that I did was I let go of everything. I let go of all of those thoughts, all of those feelings. I even let go of trying to support her in a way that she was not open to. Really understanding that I'm on my own journey. She's on her own journey. If I try to step in or if I try to give her advice that she's not asking for, then that just shuts her down. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it should be. She's becoming independent, right? So it took, now this wasn't overnight. This wasn't thinking, you know,
it's a process.
This was years. This was, I am not even joking. This was a few years of me going to get massages and get into, you know, the essential oils and trying different things to calm myself down, you know, and taking care of me. It was a long, long time, honestly.
And that's the hardest part. They don't come with a guidebook or a manual, and each child is so different. So, and as parents, we feel like it is our job to be the adult in the room, which it is. And it sounds like you went through your journey. What helped you to be the adult in the room? What helped you to say, hey, I have to change myself and to help facilitate her growth?
Because it wasn't working. She wasn't coming around. She wasn't talking to me. She was shutting me out. And, you know, I really had to dig deep and be like, okay, what was that last conversation we had? What did I say? How do I think she felt about it? And that's when I came up with, you know what? She puts up her back and she shuts down every time, like, I just suggest something nicely. Like, you know, we're parents. We think we do know what's best a lot of times, right? Or at least we think we do. But they're their own independent human being. And we have to realize that as they get older, we need to make that shift as parents, because we've been taking care of them for so long and helping them with everything that, you know what? We do need to start stepping back. And kids that have special needs, that's even harder, because we do so much more and we have to step in so much more and we want and need to protect them. And we do, but we have to remember they are independent human beings and we need to help them become independent as they can maybe more slowly, but we have to do it. And that's a hard thing, being a parent, doing that.
It is hard. It is hard. And I appreciate that honesty because, you know what? As parents, we really do struggle and we have to make sure that we're kind to ourselves too. And we also have to reframe. We wear so many different hats and, you know, there is a lot on our shoulders and it is difficult. Okay. So in being a grandmother of a child with autism, what different roles do you feel like you have and that you fulfill? And how is that different than being a mom caregiver?
Well, you know what, Leia? Actually, there's no difference. I am like a mom to him. I haven't been able to be a grandparent, so I don't know what it's like to be a grandparent, honestly. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I'm totally
100%
okay with
assumption
that.
Of role. I'm the mom.
Yeah, basically, I'm doing everything a mom would do, right? I'm not really a grandparent.
You're not really a grandparent.
I don't
okay,
get to
but
just,
that's good.
Just send
that's...
them home, you know, buy them a lot of stuff and send them home. No.
Never happens. We go through all the things that moms do and feel the same guilt that mom feels and
totally
carry that same burden.
Totally. Totally. Yep.
Was that harder as a grandmother versus a mother, being that you have different levels of energy and almost also mind frame of, like, I'm not supposed to be here?
No, you know what? I don't go there. In this journey of helping myself, taking care of myself, I've put myself in a different position. You know, I did shift. I made a shift and I don't even remember what it was like before because I was kind of like that before. Almost felt, okay, we'll go back to as I was going through that journey and my daughter left, I was kind of like, wait, I'm a grandmother. I'm not supposed to be doing this. When is this going to get better? When is this going to change? When is she going to be able to take him back? You know, like I'm fulfilling this for now. But once I made that shift and realized that every day is a new day and I am who I am and that's enough and he is, you know, and everybody, once I was okay with that, it's kind of like, okay, this is just the way it is. And I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way at this point.
So acceptance is very important in moving forward.
Definitely. Hard to get there though. I'm telling you, it's not easy. And it's just, you know, a lot of work.
A lot of work. If parents are looking for help in this area and getting that support, in finding support, what would you recommend for them?
Find your tribe. That is going to be number one, I believe, because being a parent of a special needs kid is so lonely. It is so isolating. And, you know, we're moms and honestly, we can do a lot. You know, we do it all. We keep it together. You know, we keep the household together and the family. Even if it's hard and it wears us out, we really isolate ourselves. So it's finding a person, finding a group, finding a tribe of support for you. And that's really number one. Secondly, I would say, you know, I do have, we didn't go into it, but I do have a business where I teach social communication skills, right, to students. But then I also have a course for moms and to help them through this and find herself while raising a neurodivergent child. And one thing I want her to know, mom, parents to know, is like we talked, Leia, take care of yourself, you know, get to know yourself. And, you know, let go of that outside noise because it influences us so much that we're actually making decisions that really aren't ours. We're caught up in what other people are saying and doing. And so we're like, oh, we need to do it that way. Or why aren't I good enough? Why aren't I doing it right? And we get caught up in that. And that's just not a good place to be. So those two things, I mean, there's lots more, of course, but those two things, finding support and then also being okay with yourself. And, you know, building that confidence because you're an awesome mom, you're an awesome parent, and you just have to find him or her inside of you.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit more about this. We'll start with your program that you developed for parents, and then second, we'll go to your social thinking program, which I'm super interested in. But let's hear a little bit about the program that you've developed for parents and how they could benefit and what you think you bring to the table with it.
So the program for parents is really about taking, it's for not just parents, it's for moms, because, and I'll say this right off the bat, it's designed specifically for moms because of how much perimenopause and menopause has to do with, you know, just distracting us or getting involved in our parenting and our everyday life. So that's a part of the program, is really getting to know that part of it too, the hormonal challenges and imbalance and what to do about that. So it is for moms, but
what are the challenges involved with that? That's a great topic.
Oh, the challenges. Okay. First of all, we've got, you know, kids who are going through hormones, right? And then we have our own hormones. So I think it's really important for moms to understand that perimenopause really starts in our 30s. And there are lots of signs for that. But many times,
what are the signs?
Oh, good question. Yeah, I know. I could go on and on, right?
I'm just kidding. No, I'm just slowing you down so that we understand all the good knowledge that you have up there.
That's good. You know, you're dealing with somebody with ADHD, right? So I have it all in my head, but I don't always get every single thing out. So thank you. I appreciate that, Leah.
Well, we're loving your knowledge.
So some of the symptoms might be just, it could be brain fog. Like you forget something. You go into a room and it's like, oh my gosh, I forget why I'm here. It could be, you know, the weight gain, the bloatedness, the belly fat, blood pressure issues, high blood pressure, stuff like that. There are so many different things that could be medical, but a lot of times it is related to your hormone imbalances. So, you know, think about it. This is even a fact scientifically, girls young, like 15, as young as 15 years old, can develop some of these perimenopausal symptoms. Okay. And it's stress, but that's because the cortisol is influencing the progesterone, which influences the estrogen, you know, so it can happen with high stress situations for long periods of time. But typically it's more in our 30s, in the mid to late 30s it starts. So any kind of symptoms like that, the distress, anxiety, mood swings, my gosh, that's not, you know, if it's around our period, okay, yeah. But if we have mood swings outside of that, then it may be perimenopause.
And what things are helpful in treating perimenopausal symptoms?
Stress reduction, my course, which that's what it's all about. It's, you know, just kind of step by step bringing moms to this place of, I understand why I'm doing the things I'm doing and what to do about it and how to parent at the same time. Getting to know a neurodivergent kid and how they think and react and just how to combine those things. Really, it's stress reduction. That's it. And how can we do that? Well, Leah, that's a whole other thing. That could be not just our own well-being that we can do physically and mentally, but also what we eat, what we put on our bodies, you know, people we put ourselves around. It's you have to think about it holistically. You know, it's everything. There are so many, and this is something I just learned the other day, and I didn't know this, but the receipts that are printed out in the grocery stores and stuff like that, it has a chemical on it that is a hormone disruptor. So, oh my gosh. So everything, I mean, you know, you can't just all of a sudden, bam, change everything, but to be cognizant of that and to really understand that, hey, maybe I can take this out of my diet or exchange this for something a little easier on my body, you know?
And I like how you're talking about different, you know, we usually think of mental health as going to a coach or going to a therapist and talking through what's bothering us. But really, there's like a whole picture out there of how we could take care of ourselves. I love that you talked about who we surround ourselves with, if we have toxic relationships or, you know, it could be anybody. It could be a spouse. It could be a parent. It could be a friend. And if they're telling us toxic things about that child, about how we're interacting. We start to believe it and we start to feel toxic. So I love that piece of who we surround ourselves with. Yes, we have to go out and find support groups and your tribe, but even in your day to day, who you're surrounding yourself with and making sure that you have someone positive telling you how good you are all day, or if they're not there, finding that friend, that support, something, because we need to validate ourselves, but we have to hear someone validating us too. We need to have somebody that's pumping us up and making us feel good. And we have to gravitate towards those people because, yes, we all know we're amazing, but we also need that validation. Just like every child needs the validation. And as parents, it's our job to validate and to praise and to give that positive feedback. Every one of us has a little child in us that still wants to be loved and still wants to be praised. So that's a really great point that you brought up, like who we surround ourselves with. And I love the topic of what we feed ourselves, if you want to touch on that a little bit more.
Sure. So there are specific foods, and I don't know them all on the top of my head because I have everything like in notes. I have like a little guidebook for parents in my course as far as some of the foods to eat to help with the hormones. So, you know, of course, we always say like leafy greens and stuff like that, but, you know, like chia seeds and, you know, different things will help in different ways. And it's just good to put these things into our diet. And then there are things to really kind of avoid that will, that are too acidic and will, you know, spike certain hormones. So it's like I said, I can't think of them all on the top of my head because I have them all in a guidebook so that I don't have to remember.
But okay, that sounds amazing, this program. If a parent wanted to find your program, where would they look?
Parentingpowerhouse.com.
Okay, amazing. Now, the next thing you touched on was your 2B social private practice. Tell us a little bit about that and what's different about it and what you've developed over the years.
Oh, thank you. This is my baby. Okay, so I love 2B Social, and no matter what happens, I'm hoping that even if I'm 80 years old, I still can work with students, right? But this was based on Michelle Garcia Winner's social thinking program. And honestly, it is such an awesome program that it works for every single student that buys into it, okay? So that's big, right? I don't want parents bringing kids to me kicking and screaming. It doesn't work. I don't want to waste time and money, right? And it's not okay for a kid to be feeling like, you know, this isn't working, or, you know, it's just not good. They won't learn, but maybe they'll be ready a year later. So anyway, with this program, I'm really, I put together a lot of the best pieces of Michelle Garcia Winner's program. I put it all together. Now, I'm a teacher, or I was a middle school teacher, so I used curriculum all the time, and I would do my own things and you know, change things around and use what I needed for whatever kids. So I started this program using her curriculum. I spent a lot of money on this stuff, and I tried it out, and it just was like, oh, so frustrating, and not every kid was like open to this stuff, and so I really had to change it around. So what I did was I put something together that was, you know, as engaging as possible, but I work with mostly teens and young adults. I use video clips from like Friends, the show Friends, the show Seinfeld. Yeah, Big Bang Theory, like little clips of real life type of problems. And it's works because what we're doing is we're learning a concept and then we are practicing it by watching a clip and analyzing. And I analyze the heck out of things. And my students are like, what the heck are you doing? It's like, well, if we can think of every way possible somebody might be thinking or feeling, we've got it, right? So we've got that. So I use these clips and they're funny, right? So I have to use the comedic clips because that's what triggers our brain to like enjoy and remember. So we're practicing and the concepts, you know, we don't just go over it one time. We go over it several times and I use several different clips. I've got hundreds of clips that I've used over the course of, you know, over a decade. And it's just so much fun. So
I love this. You're using real life scenarios that the kids are feeling like they're almost watching a movie or watching something, which is such a positive reinforcer, I think, for a lot of our children. And then you're taking those social situations and breaking it down for them. Is that how it works?
Well, not exactly. See, I'm not teaching any skill sets, and I don't put any words or ideas into their head, because if their brain is going to change, they have to do this, right? So I'm kind of giving a concept, like, okay, let me think. Okay, a clip that I use is from Seinfeld, where Kramer, he is talking to George's girlfriend. Now, George's girlfriend has a large nose, and they were all joking about it and talking about it. And Kramer knows this. And he was talking about some girls at this club were really pretty. And the girlfriend said, oh, yeah, they're so intimidating. You know, the girls in New York City. He's like, oh, you're just as pretty as them, except you need a nose job. And so it's like, okay, he just said it. So what I would do was I'd set the kids up with something like that and say, you know, what happens if you tell the truth? Even if it is the truth, but it might hurt somebody's feelings. So we talk about that, about hurting somebody. And so I have the student, you know, kind of go through their thoughts and ideas and then get them set up to watch this clip so that they can analyze it and pull these things together and figure it out. So we're figuring it out together. And if the student doesn't get it, then that's okay. We just talk about it as much as we can and try to analyze and maybe go in a different direction than the next lesson that we have. I do it again with a different clip until their brain has picked this up.
I love that. I love that. And I also like how you have developed this concept that they have to be self-learners. What age group are you working with? And which, you know, the spectrum is so wide. So what type of children are you focusing on?
Good question. Because this is for kids with close to an average IQ or above, verbal to a certain degree, not necessarily verbal, but bright enough, because we can go in other directions. The age group, because I'm online, really needs to be, the kids need to be 12 or 13 and older to keep their attention. The younger kids, now in person, locally, I do see kids younger in person, like 8, 9 through 12. But then we can do more hands-on, and we might do like different types of clips. I don't necessarily use, you know, Friends and all that kind of stuff. We use commercials or clips from Disney, you know, movies or cartoons, stuff like that.
Inside Out 2, do you like that one?
You know, I do, but it's a little intense. Like, it's just a little intense, and it gives too much information. Like, we're not able to analyze enough. Like, it gives it all, kind of thing. I don't use it too much. I used to.
You used to. I actually heard a different social worker recommend it, and the child that she recommended it to told me that I could relate to the characters. I had some of those same feelings. So I never actually watched it myself, but that was one that I heard of.
Yes, it's great for that. They can relate. And that's the thing. I think it gives too much information. Like, for me, it's hard for me to teach that because, yes, they're getting it directly from the character. So it's a little harder for me to teach it.
So don't give it all on a silver platter. Let them come and have to dissect the scenario.
Yes, Leah, we want them to think and be able to do this on their own without us holding their hand, right? So they've got to become independent.
Yeah. In real life, they're independent. They're out there on their own.
Yep.
Okay, so now you've been in the field for a lot of years. What would you say, what has changed for you as a practitioner working with children from when you started till now? What life lessons have you learned?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I've learned about myself that I'm very intuitive now because I've been working with them for so long, right? So I kind of, you know what I'm doing. And the one thing that I've really learned is, in order to do that, every single kid, I mean, we always say, once you've met one kid on the spectrum, you've met one kid on the spectrum. Well, that is so, so true, because everybody's mind is different, right? So I have to constantly be flexible and constantly be like, even if I have a lesson plan, it's probably going to change you know, and that I wasn't quite used to when I was teaching. You know, I had a lesson plan, I pretty much stuck with it. But this is like, oh man, I might be only five minutes into a lesson and I'm like struggling to like change things and like keep up with this kid, right? Because man, he's throwing me for a loop, you know?
We have to always be ready to pivot, move on. And when we become the rigid ones, when we're too rigid, it makes...
Yeah, is that crazy?
It makes for difficulty in making progress. So I love that. As a parent too, and as a therapist, like having that mindset that we can pivot if need be for the success of the child is really important.
And you know, what kind of got me there is realizing what I really learned over all these years is, my gosh, these kids are the most incredible people or human beings in the world. Their brains are so awesome and so incredible. And even if it's frustrating, you know, it doesn't matter. They're incredible. So what I've learned, the one thing that has really helped me to help them is knowing that they're living in the moment. Like, even if they get stuck on a past event, it's just because they didn't process through it. That's it. They're not really thinking about or reliving that event necessarily. They just haven't processed through it. And there is no future, because we can't predict the future, right? So it only makes sense that these kids are living in the moment. And it took me a while to convince myself that that is a beautiful thing. And I've learned to try to think that way, think like them. And it's made me a better person, because I'm more grateful and I cherish, you know, different things in life that I didn't before. And that's what they taught me. And that's what I've learned. And I think that is the biggest piece, is trying to just take this kid's perspective and like, this is wonderful, actually.
Yeah. And appreciate the children for who they are, so that then exactly we feel like our cup is more full.
Exactly.
Now, in the past, I've heard you speak about a holistic approach. What does that mean? And how does that affect treatment and being a parent?
You know, when parents come to me, it's like they have something specific that they want to work on. Maybe it's the kids and how they relate to their siblings. Like, they're always fighting and, you know, they have to get to know each other. Or, you know, it's really difficult to go in public places. And so trying to figure that out. Well, holistically, you know, if you think about it, we have to take in every bit and every piece of the environment, as well as, like we talked about before, food, sleep, everything else. So we have to take kind of a holistic approach and break down everything, not just focus on one thing like communication or behavior or something like that. And that's something I didn't mention. I don't look at behavior as behavior necessarily, try to figure out what it is behind it. So I think that holistically we're looking at, like I said, the environment. If there's an environment change, that's probably it. First of all, let's take a look at that first. Maybe there's a person that the kid has only been around once or twice or even five times. It's not enough. They're still going to be nervous or, I guess maybe not nervous, but uncomfortable. I would say uncomfortable or whatever. So we have to take a look at everything, is what I mean. Sleep patterns, food, things that we don't really think about sometimes, because we get so caught up in the rat race of like getting everything done and, you know, having to do everything the best we can. And then our own anxieties and our own stress, and we get overwhelmed. But we have to take a look at that, the kid and everybody around us. That's the holistic approach.
Looking at the whole picture and not one individual thing that's kind of our roadblock right now. And also to remember that the roadblocks are only speed bumps, and that we will eventually problem solve them and get over it.
Yes. And Leah, I want to add this. Something that I do use with my parents is I say, you know what? I had a parent. This is why I had a parent say, you know what? Like, this has been great. I've learned something. I took a step forward, but you know what? Then over the weekend, all this happened and I feel like I took two steps back. And I said, okay, let's reframe this. Because if you take a step forward, you cannot take steps backwards, right? You're not taking a step backwards. You might take a sidestep. That means that you've gone forward and you're feeling stuck, or you feel like you've gone backwards, but you're not. You need to find a different way to that step again. So it's just like a sidestep.
Yeah, a repetition. Sometimes we try and do it again and it doesn't work that time, but keep on going. You kind of got a taste for the right direction. You're going to get there. And it's not easy. It is hard. And keeping on pushing forward and not looking in our rear view mirror is really important.
It is really hard.
What would you tell moms that are struggling with this right now, that are hitting road bumps, are feeling a little stuck? What kind of encouragement or words of encouragement can you give to these moms?
So this is loaded and it's tough, because I know once we are in the middle of it, it feels horrible and it feels like there's no way out until we get to the next step or the next level, or we get out of this, right? So first thing is preventative, right? Like we talked about, try to prevent as much as possible. And there are ways to do this. But you know what? This minute that's happening is going to be over. You've gone through these minutes before. So the last time you got stuck, what happened? Well, you're here. You're fine. You made it, right? So that's going to happen again. So concentrate on one thing at a time, not what might be or could be. So, you know, even if everything feels so stressful, realize that it's the pressures from the outside. It's not you. It's the pressures from the outside that you're, you know, kind of like taking a look at as, you know, this is happening to me, you know, kind of thing. So just know that this will pass. You just concentrate on just this one thing. Don't worry about what's coming next, or you have to do what's next. I mean, that's one thing that I learned with these guys too, is one thing at a time. What's the most important thing to deal with right now? And you know what? If they're melting down and they're not hurting themselves or anybody else, let them go. Take care of yourself. Get yourself to a level where it's like, whew, okay, now I can go deal with this.
Love that. Okay, so thank you so much for all this amazing information that you imparted. If we wanted to leave our listeners off with one positive message, and I'm thinking maybe in the social thinking realm, what would that message be?
Positive message is that every single one of you has a kid that is progressing and will progress no matter what. And you're there to help with their independence, and you're doing an awesome job, and you are enough for them. So as far as the social thinking, just our kids don't model well, but if you are able to model for them, they will get a piece of that. And modeling meaning maybe you say, oh, I'm feeling really tired today, you know, just giving them an idea of your thoughts and feelings in any given time, not when things are going rough, but like just normally, like, you know, don't assume that they understand where you're coming from. If you're cooking dinner and they're trying to talk to you and you're like, you can't, you know, transition from one thing to another, and you might be feeling frustrated, you might share that frustration, but they're not picking up on it. This is where you say that, and you're like, you know, right now I'm, you know, I can't listen to you at the same time. Not just like, hey, can you see I'm busy? You know, because that's the easy thing. Well, you can't assume that they understand what that means. It's like, okay, if they're asking you, well, no, they don't know that you're busy. And you can't. You're like, oh, I can't listen to one thing and think about another. And, you know, like, talk through your thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that message, because when we break down our own feelings, it gives our children a roadmap of how to break down their feelings. And having feelings is a normal thing that we all go through. And sometimes we feel like, hey, having these feelings are wrong or incorrect. But like you keep on saying, accepting ourselves, accepting our challenges, accepting all the things that are part of us, and then sort of explaining those things to our children, give them that gift of understanding that we're all human.
Yes, yes. And it is a gift. You're giving them a gift by, you know, just sharing that. Definitely. I love that.
Sharing thoughts. Well, thank you so much, Tara, for coming on. It was amazing.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad you had have this chance to talk.